Everybody A, Everybody Gay.
A queer exploration of Pretty Little Liars.
With your hosts, Joanna, aka Speak Pirate. I'm here, I'm queer, and I have a cat named Spencer.
And your other host, LCO123, aka Vina, a proud member of the Church of Vander Jesus.
Hello! Hello! Guess what? We are still in season 7, which means ridiculousness. After kind of the high point of last week, where we had a lot of things that work well, you know, a lot of scenes with the liars all together, a lot of narrative momentum, like there were some clear stakes that were working. Mona was in the episode. They like remembered that for last week, and then they forgot it all over again. Because this week we have a lot more of segmented liar plot lines. We have a real zero of a date between Sabrina and Emily. We have a real zero of a marriage proposal that's going to conclude this episode. But in the meantime, we have Allison wearing an enormous and unflattering cat eye sweatshirt, while Aria runs around town doing the most and looking like a widow from a film noir. So, you know, we also have Mary Drake acting creepy and campy. That's a win. And then we have the infamous Sour Girls scene.
We've been threatening it for really since this podcast's inception. I feel like we have been referencing and threatening this Sour Girls scene. And gentle listeners, don't worry. We will be doing a live reading of it. So get ready. Sometimes a scene provides so much that you simply must reenact it. So get ready for that one. This is an interesting episode. Some parts of it are very fun. I feel like Spencer and Hannah are barely in this episode in a sort of strange way. This is a much, much more like Emily Aria forward episode. And also I think that like this really cements that Aria is my favorite post time jump liar.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to argue that. It's as if Ashley, having like really shown up and shown out last week, it's as if she did that in exchange for only having to film 20 minutes of anything this week. Because all of her scenes, except I think the final one, which she's only in for like 2 seconds, all of her scenes basically take place at the brew. Like, she just seems kind of stuck there for not really any good reason. Meanwhile, the other liars are like highly mobile. Like, they're running around. Aria is like teleporting between Presser's apartment and the loft without ever going through the brew where Hannah is. You know, Spencer is like scouring state parks looking for Caleb. And Emily is like running through the halls of Rosewood High, hoping to take her college exam that she is going to miss. So yeah, everybody else, very highly mobile. Hannah, extremely stationary.
Yeah, the set budget seems to be pretty low at this point. We don't even get a shot of Spencer at the state park. It's just literally her in the car not being at the state park. And I took a note at one point that Hannah's role in this episode, I think she's just the PLL episode recapper. She's like somebody who works for, you know, I don't know, BuzzFeed, like writing recaps of the show, because that seems to be what she's doing. But Shall we dive right in?
I think that we shall. And I want to start off by saying that in addition to everything else that Aria is going to do in this episode, we started off with she's made a casserole. It is like early in the morning. She is outside the De Laurentiis house waiting around instead of like waiting in her car like a regular person might. She is like outside standing in the middle of the lawn holding a casserole, because today is the day that Allison is being released from Welby. So she's on the phone with Emily. She's trying to get Emily to like come and stand on the lawn with her. A car pulls up. Allison, in the shapeless cat eye sweatshirt, exits. But it is not Jason with her. It is Mary Drake. And we get the first, like, hat on hats, which is that Welby is afraid that Allison is going to sue them over Rollins not being a real doctor and putting her in a Hannibal Lecter mask. So they're doing an internal investigation, and now she has to briefly live with her unbalanced goth vampire aunt. Sure, makes total sense. Arya is puzzled and sketched out by this arrangement as if she's never, like, been on the show before. But Allison is just certain that she'll be able to get details about what's up with Mary as part of this whole plan. As they go into the house and close the front door, like, Mary is kind of all dressed in black and staring out at Arya, and Arya is there dressed all in black staring at Mary, and it's very noir.
I have an extremely easy fix for the weirdness of the Mary has to come babysit Allison plotline and that somehow having to do with Welby. What if Mary was just on the board of Welby?
Like Jessica had been on the board of Bradley.
Yeah, and like Mary was on the board of Welby because like her daughter was at Welby. Mm-hmm. And like maybe it would be a thing of like this is how this there's some like connection between Mary and Welby. Wouldn't that have made this make so much more sense?
I mean, they don't really care that it doesn't make sense. So, you know.
It's true. But Andrea Parker is continuing to have such a good time. The way she says the word casserole. Casserole, Arya. What a thoughtful gesture. Like, she has this way, this, like, odd delivery to her lines that is so fun. And her voice is, like, in this really weird, low, unnatural register. Already we're kind of getting hints that Allie and Mary have a bit of a, you know, Jessica-Allie kind of dynamic. Like, Allie is kind of, like, Allie seems very teenager-y, I feel, when she has to interact with Mary. This is very much a, like, don't worry about it too much. Like, this is what needs to happen for the plot. I do like, though, that Arya offers to come stay with them as well. Mm-hmm. Arya, like, I feel like she gets some good friend points. And also, do we think that she was wearing this elaborate, I think I described it to you as Melissa Hastings goes to a funeral at Coachella getup to make the casserole?
Yes, I definitely think that she was.
Okay. Maybe the cape could, like, double as an apron.
I mean, the cape is really, it's really something. She's really, I speculated to you that they had this, like, grieving widow wardrobe set up for Allison, then decided that, oh no, she doesn't fit in it, and so we're just going to, like, grab a sweatshirt off of someone who's, like, working lighting and put it on her. Like, that's how much thought looks like it went into Allison's wardrobe, whereas Arya is wearing, like, widow's weeds through this whole episode.
Yeah, Arya's outfit looks expensive, too. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So Arya gets the shush this week, which feels appropriate. And then we go to inside the De Laurentiis house where Mary is spinning some explanation about how Elliot contacted her in London, letting her know about Charlotte's death. Elliot seemed to share in her grief. Oh, could she get a glass of water? Allie says that she understands the Charlotte connection. But, and she withholds the glass of water while she says this, she does not understand why Mary would go along with the whole gaslighting situation. Mary claims that Rollins manipulated her and she was so vulnerable. She basically says that Rollins convinced her that Allie had killed Charlotte, but that she tried to talk him out of all the torture. Also, this is another episode where it's like, LOL, money means nothing, because Mary is like, I only did it for the money. That felt like, you know, like redemption enough for me. She says that she has so little family left and she hopes for Allison's forgiveness. Allie forks over the water. And they agree that all they really know is that Elliot Rollins was a fake identity. Mary could use a lie down. And Allison has a not great parting shot about how the mattress isn't very comfortable. And, like, she hopes that Mary, you know, is okay with that. And Mary's like, I've slept on worse. And we close on this kind of disturbing shot of Allison pulling the sleeves of her shapeless sweatshirt up. And we see the marks of the binding on her wrists.
Now, no one makes a move to put the casserole in the fridge. It's just sitting on the counter. Do we feel like this is a reflection of the spy versus spy emotional dynamics or a commentary on Arya's cooking?
Oh, good question. Good question. Well, I guess we don't know what kind of casserole this is. I feel like it's probably some like vegan monstrosity that tastes terrible.
I mean, I feel like it's probably it's aureus. Like I feel like it's probably something weird.
It's Aria feels like somebody who puts too much turmeric in everything. You know what I mean? Like everything she cooks ends up coming out like a weird shade of orange.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Oh boy.
This is a confusing scene. So there's popcorn and there's wine, and Emily is asleep on the couch, and then Sabrina is there and she's handing her coffee. And so at first I was like, wow, they really did not do a good job distinguishing Sabrina's apartment from the loft. However, it transpires that Sabrina talked Emily's ear off, talked in fact until Emily fell asleep. Emily is like, oh, guess I missed my chance for a goodnight kiss. And then they do kiss. Like, morning breath does not exist in this universe. Like, oh, that's just great. I'm sure that wine and popcorn from last night is going to taste really great with the coffee that Sabrina was drinking. But okay, so they kiss. No one ever has morning breath in this world. Their kisses are interrupted by Emily's phone. In this episode, Emily does not seem to care at all about Allison being released from the mental hospital, but she does care about a test that she needs to be taking at Hollis that started 10 minutes ago. Oh, no. Now, this is the point where we learn that they are at the loft, because Emily gives Sabrina, like, some hurried instructions to stay as long as she wants and also how to lock up. Okay. So Emily sleeps on the couch. Where did Sabrina sleep? Did she sleep in a chair or on the floor? Did she sleep in Hannah's bed? Where did Hannah sleep? Why on earth in this situation would Sabrina not have woken Emily up to be like, I'm going to leave now? What kind of total weirdo is Sabrina? Like, did Sabrina maybe not realize that Emily had fallen asleep? Did she just, like, keep talking all night? And she's, like, still talking as she hands Emily this coffee? Like, what is going on? This sounds like such a bad date. Also, I'm guessing because there's, like, popcorn and wine, I'm kind of putting that together to think that, like, they were watching a movie or something. Which, again, is a super bad choice because we know that Sabrina does not even have a TV. Remember, that's, like, one of the facts that we know about Sabrina. So, like, being like, oh, hey, want to watch, like, the latest pop culture thing with me? That's something Sabrina does not participate in. So, I don't know. Vina, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on this date? What are your thoughts about where did Sabrina sleep? What's happening here?
This is a series of confusing choices, both from the writing of the scene to the way that the characters are behaving in the scene. Because, like, why they didn't just have it be that she slept over at Sabrina's, I don't understand. Other than just, like, they don't have money for sets, I guess. Like, they couldn't have, like...
throw another bedspread on the bed in the barn. Like,
I know. It's not that hard. It's really not that hard. And then, right, like, the logistics of an overnight visitor at the loft are just, they boggle the mind when treated this way. And, like, it couldn't have even been that, like, they had sex and, like, Sabrina slept over and, like, they wake up and they're, like, Sabrina, you know, Emily's, like, tangled in the sheet and, like, Sabrina has gone to make coffee. Like, no, it has to be that Emily is fully dressed. There's probably a chastity belt on under her clothes.
She's got, like, the Victorian ghost. Like, she's got a ribbon around her neck with whatever outfit she's got going on.
She has a ribbon around her neck. And, like, it has to be that they didn't even kiss the previous night. So, like, this is their first kiss happening in this moment. Because I don't think they had kissed previously, I don't think. It's so weird. The other thing that's very strange about Sabrina in this episode, I mean, take your pick, right? But like, be a completely different character. Like, the Sabrina that we met previously was like very self-righteous and like pretty confident in being like, Emily, like, I don't like that you've lied to me, this and that. But like, the Sabrina in this episode is like a shrinking Violet who assumes that Emily is breaking up with her and like nervously stammers her way through accepting a second date offer. So like, I am so confused by the construction of the Sabrina character. I'm so confused by the construction of like Sabrina and Emily as a potential couple. I don't understand.
I mean, I'm like glad that Emily is like maybe gay again in this episode, but it is a real head scratcher why we're even continuing to have Sabrina like happen here.
Yeah, it's like stop trying to make Sabrina happen. Sabrina's never going to happen. Like, this is also like a weird situation where this is a character who matters not a bit in the long term, but like they have basically tried to reboot this character like 3 or 4 times, because they first introduced her as like the kooky chef who supplies pot gummies, and like, and then she was like this sort of like almost conservative like Luddite character and like very self-righteous, and then she was like flirty woman at the bar, and now she's whatever this version is like. At a certain point, it's like, this isn't working. Like, we need to start over, you know? Yeah.
So this is all very bizarre. And then Emily rushes out into a rehash of a plot that she has already gone through back in high school, because that is how much the writers care about her character arc at this time.
Exactly. I did say, though, that this would be a good Sabrina as A moment, because it's like she somehow, you know, maybe she like drugged Emily and Emily overslept and now she like has unlimited access to the loft. I mean, Sabrina would be an extremely boring A, but like the way that this all shakes down would work well for a potential A.
Continue.
Well, I was just going to say that, like, Sabrina would almost make more sense if she was on the A-team.
Yeah, I really agree. Well, I feel like there's a line about being a poet means giving to a thing more tenderness than God gives to it. And I feel like you are giving Sabrina more depth than, like, the show has ever given her. Like, ooh, drugging Emily, ooh, unlimited access to the loft.
Yeah.
That would be excellent. Too bad that's not what's up here.
Too bad. Well, from one bad couple to another, Aria is reading the paper at Presra's, scanning over an article about, you know, what's going on with Rollins. But she pretends that she's just been tap, tap, tapping away on her laptop when he walks in, talking about his productive trip. So he's been out of town. He says that something happened while he was away. He needed to concentrate on Liam's notes, which, like, I don't know what that is. I feel like that's that involves, like, him, you know, I don't know, like, masturbating on a picture of Liam's slashed face or something. But he instead ended up seeing Nicole's parents. He wanted to let them know about what's going on between him and Aria, and they are happy for him. He all but says to Aria, I've been spying on you, and I know that you're keeping a secret, as he says that he didn't want her to feel uncomfortable by him withholding some information from her. Aria says that nothing important happened while he was away, and further tucks the newspaper under other newspapers.
You know, there is nothing I love more than freeze-framing a newspaper from Rosewood, and so I will tell you that this particular article repeats the same paragraph about Rollins over and over and over again in the red rum or similar.
Great set dressing there. Really, the set work is like top notch right now.
Okay, this is so dumb that it makes me a little mad to even have to recap it. Emily runs to the classroom through the halls of Rosewood High. Like, this is not a hollow set at all. This is like, they might have even just taken footage from Emily in high school when the building was like attacking her. She runs down the hallways, to the classroom where her exam is in progress. It has already started, and the proctor will not let her in. Oh, no.
Yeah, they didn't. Yeah, they didn't even try to make the walls or the halls look in any way different here. Like, this is simply Rosewood. So Hannah at the brew, where she will be holding court this episode, overhears some chatter on the cop radios. There are two cops getting coffee. Spencer walks in just then, and of course, she knows the police codes, identifying that the police are referring to an abandoned car and a missing person. Spencer says that the cops are withholding details from the news, which she thinks is a good thing. It means that they think that Elliot is missing and that everything is going to be fine. Hannah is kind of jumpy and anxious. Spencer spies Hannah's business plan. And there's some definite, you know, tension here between these two, and not the kind that we usually like.
Yes, yes, true. So this is a moment when we hear the cops are getting a call about this abandoned car at Malvern Station. And yes, there are a few things that seem to have gotten stuck in the hamster wheel of writing that is this episode. Malvern Station is the first one, because we're going to be hearing about Malvern Station so many times. It's very silly. And then we'll talk about the others as we get to them. But I feel like Malvern Station is like the first appearance of something we're going to hear about all the time.
And it's also kind of weird because, like, it's sort of an awkward thing for somebody to have to say over and over again, like Malvern Station. It doesn't really roll off the tongue.
No, it doesn't. And the fact that they keep saying it by name really makes it feel like it is going to be important.
Yes. Yeah. No, there are just a couple phrases that they really enjoyed in this episode. You're totally right.
Yeah. So, So Hannah's blah, blah, blah business plan for Lucas. Aria texts that she got a phone call from Mona, who has found something regarding the burner phone. And then we cut to Aria at the loft, who is going over some info from Mona with Emily. Now, remember, we last saw Aria at Presra's apartment, which is above the brew. Now she's at the loft. She never walked through the brew. So obviously she has a portal that she's like working through here. And Mona called Aria, which is so interesting. Obviously their hate flirting from the previous episode has you know, yielded something there, because Aria now gets to give all the exposition that Mona is trying to nail down a location from which Rollins was frequently using the phone. Also, he sent a text the night he took Allison out of Welby, saying that Allison didn't kill Charlotte after all. So now they aren't sure that he was going to kill Allison. They think the number might belong to Jenna, but who can say? Now, there are a lot of like things that you just have to like take in this episode at face value, but their decision that Rollins was not going to kill Allison in the woods is a true head scratcher. Like, what do you think his plan, like, do you have any alternate theories that he's going for a midnight stroll? Like, if he wanted to get her out of the hospital, he could have just checked her out of the hospital. He could have released her. Instead, he, like, snuck her out in dead of night and took her to, like, the middle of the woods where murders happen. Like, I don't know. This is very thin gruel that they are cutting here.
Yeah, and I assume that the reason that they decide to have it be this is that they want the liars to feel more guilty for the fact that they killed this guy, that it was less like, oh, in defense of Allison. But that doesn't really end up mattering that much. Like, much more of the processing around all of this is about, like, are we going to get caught rather than, like, do we feel bad that we killed this guy? And also, like, so much about this episode is establishing that Rollins totally was a scumbag. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I totally agree. It's a weird detail to throw in there. And I'm not sure, like, I just don't think it really matters that much whether he thought she did or did not kill Charlotte. Like, that, in the grand scheme of things, it really doesn't.
No, and also, that doesn't mean he wasn't going to kill her. Like, he obviously didn't care about her at all. Like,
yes. Well, this is that weird PLL equation thing where, like, everything is, it's like, well, this person made this person do that thing for this reason. Like, there's no, like, there's, like, often on PLL, like, no nuance to human behavior. It's just like, well, if they didn't believe this thing, they wouldn't have done that thing. It's an obvious right. equation, which, like, that's not really how human beings work. So this is a weird moment. Emily lets Allison in to the loft and openly talks about her date last night. And Allison says that she didn't know that Emily was seeing anyone. And Emily says, well, it's new. And there's like a half second of awkward eye contact. And when I say a half second, I mean a half second of awkward eye contact between the two of them that I think is supposed to imply something, whether it's Allison feeling jealous or Emily feeling awkward or like just like some element of feeling between these two people. But then it's very quickly moved past and it's never referenced again for the rest of the episode.
And I will also add that it is just that half second of eye contact because the line readings are very flat. Like yes. the line readings yes. of like it's not like, oh, I didn't know you were seeing anyone. And it's yeah. not like, oh, I didn't know you were seeing anyone. It's like, yeah. it's truly like something that you might say to like an acquaintance that you had not seen in like three since before the pandemic. Like,
right. Yeah. Like, oh, I didn't know you were seeing someone. Yeah. Yeah.
It really feels so. Yeah. It is a weird moment. And it's also, it feels really weird for Emily to be like, oh yeah, sorry, I didn't come greet you from getting out of the mental hospital, but I had a hot date. Like, that also seems like, you know, maybe not the most necessary thing to open with here.
Well, and I do think that there's like a generous reading here that Emily is like maybe flaunting it a little bit to try okay. to get a reaction from Allison.
Who's been widowed for like all of 3 days.
Right, right. But like, it's not really in the text. Like, this is very much a moment where like, I could see, you know, a diehard Emerson shipper being like, oh my God, did you see the way that Allison reacted to Emily? That flicker of eye contact meant that her heart is breaking. But like the average viewer could just look at this and be like, what? Nothing happened. Like, what is this? And it doesn't matter anyway, because in jumps Aria with there is a fanfic going on off screen between Aria and Mona and like their various like phone sexts and like their conversations. Like, I really want to know what those are about. But she has found from Mona the name of the apartment where Rollins was using his burner, but it is not the place where he was staying when he was pretending to be, you know, dating Allison. Allie has to realize like 5 times in this episode that Rollins has been lying to her about everything. This time she is like, he was lying to me about everything. And they weirdly, Aria and Emily kind of like try to defend him for a second. And Allie's like, well, he's still an ass. Allie has to be very indignant in this episode, and I feel like it's just not a super interesting mode, the way that they are writing her indignation. Aria votes Jenna for the burner. Emily votes Mary. Again, we're just, like, taking votes on who we think various suspects might be. Allie says that she thinks she believes Mary, but that doesn't mean that she trusts her. And there's some conversation about whether or not they should go to the apartment. Emily thinks they should. Aria thinks that it's a bad idea since the police have found the car. Allie does nothing. And Emily, who like hasn't been involved like in the mystery seemingly for the last like 12 hours while she was napping on the couch, is very upset about the fact that they are going to be doing nothing. Allie, you know, sort of shakes her head, referring to all the lies that she's told. She should have seen Elliot coming. But it's like not a moment that particularly lands because they haven't done any really good emotional work with Allison through this whole time period.
Yes. And this is also the scene where I think it's Allison or someone says, like, he didn't just have a burner phone. He had a burner apartment. And so this is where we get the phrase burner apartment, which again is going to like haunt us throughout the episode. It's going to be burner apartment, burner apartment, burner apartment until yeah. it doesn't make any sense. I mean, it doesn't make any sense now, but yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Some, they were like very enamored with that phrase.
Well, also props to Mona for getting not only the location, but actually the apartment number that a phone was calling from.
Yes. Yeah. Really good pinpointing there, Mona. Yeah, for sure. That is like a very accurate cell tower.
Yes. Oh, so having just left the loft and heading back to the De Laurentiis house, which is like where we're going to see her next, Allison stops at an outdoor ATM to get out $100 from fast cash. But oh no, the ATM advises her that her account has been frozen due to insufficient funds. Not just like the ATM saying you have insufficient funds, but no, in Rosewood, even the ATMs put a hat on a hat and say your account has been frozen due to insufficient funds. Egads. This is the first moment that, like, what we take away from it is Allison is broke. Allison has lost all of her money. And this is, so with Malvern Station, the burner apartment, and Allison losing all of her money, we have the trifecta of this episode. Things we are going to be hearing about, like, in a Mad Libs fashion. Like, when a scene just has nothing else going on, one of these things is definitely going to appear.
Yeah, if you happen to be, like, you know, putting your laundry away and stepped out of the room in this moment when Allie's at the ATM, don't worry, viewers, because it's going to be established, like, three more times throughout this episode that Allison doesn't have any money.
Right! Yes, this is going to be established multiple times. However, we never actually get a moment of, like, Allison needs money for XYZ. It's not like they're going to get kicked out of the house if they don't have a mortgage payment. It's not like Allison needs food and is not going to be able to eat unless, like, all she's going to have is Arya's casserole for days unless she gets some money. We never have a moment of Allison, like, needing to use money for a transaction at all. So we're just going to keep hearing people talk about how she has no money over and over and over again.
Again, a very easy fix would be that, like, she has some ridiculous bill from Welby for, like, having stayed there. And, you know, you could also sneak in a little bit of commentary about the healthcare system there.
Or she doesn't want to stay with Mary Drake, and so she wants to go get a room at the Radley, but her card has declined.
Like, yes. Yes. Very easy fixes for this, but no, that would be adding stakes to the storyline, and we can't do that. So Arya once again teleports back to Prezra's, but he isn't there. There's going to be a lot of Arya, like, in a space where she thinks Prezra should be, and she's calling for him, but he's not there. He has left a note and a coffee pot. She hears his phone ring from his duffel bag, and she just, like, goes right over to pick it up. Like, no hesitation whatsoever. And who is on the caller ID but Nicole? Arya answers the phone, and I feel like what she hears is, like, stock, like, South American marketplace. Like, you know, like, if you were, like, you know, music from the that would be in, like, a James Bond movie or something.
Yes, agreed. This is also, like, not only is it weird, I think, whenever people on PLL answer another person's cell phone, but she, like, digs this cell phone out of the bag. Like, this is definitely a let it go to voicemail situation.
Yeah, this is not like, oh, the phone is, like, on the counter and she just happened to pick it up. This is like, nope, going right for that bag.
Right. So Arya, like, hangs up and then immediately calls Emily, freaking out over what to do. Emily is practicing making a type of drink that includes egg whites, which I guess I was glad to hear her say that and not mention her eggs that we've been hearing so much about previously. Emily advises Arya to delete the call. It's for the best. And she also tells a single story about her dad being dead, which Arya does not really respond to, except as it relates to herself. But we can talk about the hat on a hat on a hat. The story is that Emily's cousin had a flood in which he lost everything. And so Pam boxed up a bunch of Wayne's stuff to send to Cousin Flood. And then Cousin Flood received these things, and a cell phone, Wayne's cell phone, was in one of the boxes. And so Cousin Flood, like, I guess, just plugged it in, charged it up, and on that cell phone, called Pam. Like, Wayne's ghost was calling her. But no, it was just Cousin Flood accidentally catfishing her. And Emily is sure that there is an as reasonable explanation, even though that explanation that she just gave makes no sense. So that happens. Once they hang up, Arya like agrees that she's just gonna delete the call and not mention it. And then Emily gets a notification that her opt-out exam scored a 92%, then immediately gets a follow-up message from AD that says, "You can thank me later, ungrateful bitch." Emily is shook.
Oh my god, the Cousin Flood story is one of the most bizarre hats on a hat I can possibly
imagine. It's so unnecessary. It's one of the only times we hear about Wayne's death, and it's in this, like, super weird, unimportant side quest story as relates to whether or not Arya should delete a message from Nicole.
Also, I love how Emily is like, Nicole is dead. She is a rotting corpse. No one has ever been more dead than Nicole, who's dead in the ground. And it's like, Emily, Nicole was your friend at one point. Like, maybe a little bit of sensitivity. I do love, though, when Emily is like, why don't you just come over? We'll day drink until you calm down. And I'm like, why do these girls, you know, Emily, Arya says, like, they should just give up and go shopping. Emily says they should just give up and day drink. One of these times, hopefully they will get to do one of those things.
I really agree.
Yeah, yeah. And they, I will just say, though, Emily and Arya both look great in this episode. They have, like, really great looks.
They do, they do. Emily is wearing this, like, it's like a oversized button-up that she's wearing throughout this episode. And it is looking very nice.
And as, like, the more stressed out she becomes, like, the more she, like, her hair becomes messier, and it's a good look. It's a good look. But yes, this is such a funny scene. I also just love that, like, the show has gotten to the point where all Emily, like, what is Emily's role in an episode? To froth egg whites and spin tales about cousins we have never and will never meet. Season 7.
Like, I mean, you could even have just said that Pam boxed up a bunch of Wayne's stuff and gave it away to charity. To the church rummage sale. To, like,
sure.
You don't need this cousin who had a flood. Oh my, okay.
Well, you could even say that, like, you know, Emily, like, took Wayne's phone by mistake one time when she went out for a run. And she called her mom thinking, you know, like, it would actually kind of mean more if, like, Emily was the one who did it, you know? But, like, nope. So anyway, Hannah, still at the brew, gets a video call, our new favorite technology, from Spencer, who can't find Caleb, which continues to be very shitty of him. She has gone to the mysterious state park campground that Caleb apparently loves for his weird, secret, not at all homoerotic camping trips. And Hannah, like, I feel like the Hannah, Spencer, Kayla, like, all the boundaries are just getting real mushy in this episode. And Hannah is, like, suggesting all of these places that Spencer could check on, you know, where Caleb might be. Spencer has already checked those places. Both of them seem, like, very upset in this scene. But sort of the, before they can talk about this too much more, Hannah notices that outside the brew is Jenna. She helpfully turns her camera around so Spencer can see Jenna. Spencer directs Hannah to follow Jenna, but Hannah says that they need to act normal and not make it clear that they're on to Jenna, which is just, like, to set up what Allison is going to do in a few scenes. And then she's like, she kind of in a funny way is like, Ranger Station, go. Because it's like, Spencer has to, like, chase her boyfriend around this state park because, like, this is how he's choosing to deal with the fact that one time she wasn't available to have a conversation with him.
Well, and also, like, that he's done this enough times before that Hannah has a lot of suggestions about where he might be.
Yeah.
This is Caleb's dynamic with women. is that he's withholding and they have to go seek him out. Also, like, so much is happening with the liars. Like, Caleb knows that Hannah was just kidnapped. He doesn't know that they killed Rollins, but he knows that, like, Hannah was kidnapped. Spencer is having to deal with the fact that he had this moment with Hannah, that there's all this going on. And what does he do? He makes Spencer's life so much harder by not even returning a call, just to say, like, I'm okay, I'm taking a few days, I'll see you on Thursday. You know? Yes. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's really interesting the way that they are making Caleb so unlikable right here, considering that, like, he and Hannah are going to be reuniting in just a few episodes time.
And I mean, Hannah just, like, totally, first of all, I think it would be so embarrassing, and it should be embarrassing, if you had to call one of your friends and be like, communication has broken down to the point that I don't know where my significant other is. I think they might be at the state park, but I haven't found them. Do you have any ideas from when you guys were still dating? But it's also embarrassing for Hannah to have to be like, oh yes, our communication also broke down to that point frequently. So here are some places that I would suggest. Like, I wish that Hannah had just been like, this never gets better. This never gets anywhere good. Like, if he's running, you just have to let him come back to you. You know, like, I wish that this conversation had been a little bit different. Also, LOL that, like, Spencer's like, go, follow Jenna. And Hannah's like, no, I can't, because I am, like, contractually obligated to stay on this couch for the whole episode, so.
Well, yes. I just going back to Caleb for a second, like, a couple of thoughts come to mind, which is that one of them is that I feel like this episode is very much treating, like, I don't feel like this episode is communicating to us, like, God, Caleb's being a great big jerk the way he's treating Spencer. I feel like this episode is kind of communicating, well, this is Spencer's penance for, like, the crime of not immediately forgiving Caleb and covering up a murder that Hannah committed. You know what I mean? Like, what? I don't know what Spencer's making out with a man in the elevator, or having sex with a man in the elevator. Maybe that's her crime. But also, the fact that, like, the stakes of their lives are that often somebody that they love are in peril. And so not only is this just, like, a shitty thing for Caleb to do, it's, like, it would be very reasonable for Spencer and or Hannah and or Toby to think that Caleb had been, like, kidnapped or murdered.
Yes.
And so for him to just take off like this is, like, just wildly uncool, and many words that are stronger than uncool.
Yeah, totally agree. So Emily has called Aria back to the loft to discuss the AD message. I am indeed keeping track, and this is Aria's, like, she was first at the De Laurentiis house, then she was at Prezra's apartment, then she was at the loft, then she was at Prezra's apartment, now she's back at the loft.
Wow. Well,
still has not come back through the brew in any way, but Emily has called her back over to discuss the AD message. She is worried about why AD would do her any favors, and she's so freaked out that she grabs the Rollins burner phone and texts the accomplice number that things have changed. Need to lay low. Can we meet? The unknown person texts back to ask the usual spot. With their giant jumping to conclusions jumps, Emily and Aria determine this to mean, ding, 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 the burner apartment.
Also, Aria does have a funny line in this scene where she's like, okay, can we day drink just a little? And it's like, yes, maybe do that. Maybe day drink just a little and don't go to the burner apartment. But alas, when next we see Aria and Emily, they are basically just continuing to have this argument about whether or not they should go to the apartment as they're getting into the car, when who should approach but Sabrina, with a whole bunch of packages in her hands and a big hat on her head. Things are pretty awkward between Aria and Sabrina, and then even more awkward between Emily and Sabrina, as Sabrina inquires about Emily's test, and Emily very stiltedly is like, oh, it went fine. Sabrina walks away with a very, huh, expression on her face, and Aria helpfully notes the awkwardness.
Okay, so this is awkward Because Arya is basically, like, Emily's thief friend from the court. Also, it's awkward because Sabrina is wearing the stupid-looking hat as opposed to Arya. Like, that is really a blow to Arya. That Sabrina is wearing this, like, kind of cowboy gardening hat while delivering, I guess, an armload of muffins and coffee from the brew.
Sure.
So, okay. But then it's also awkward because she, like, wants to have, like, a cute, you know, like, afternoon after our date. You ran out weirdly. You left me at your apartment. She wants to have, like, a little chat about this. And Emily is just like, yep, fine, gotta go, bye. Which is like, first of all, like, Sabrina, get used to this because this is the template. This is going to be the template for all future reactions that you're going to have in this relationship. So it's really unclear why we even have this as a continuing plot beat.
Do you think that Sabrina thinks that Emily and Arya are having an affair and they're going off to hook up somewhere?
I don't know. No, I think she just thinks that Emily is, like, super hot and cold.
I mean, accurate.
Yeah. But I think that, like, Sabrina, I think, like, many women before her and after her, I think that Sabrina finds that, like, very captivating, which is an easy mistake to make, but, you know, being emotionally unavailable to the degree that Emily is, like, you gotta work hard. You gotta get up early.
Well, and, you know, I have to say, like, at the end of the episode, when Emily, like, turns her charm onto Sabrina briefly, I was kind of like, okay, I kind of get it. Like, when she turns the light on you, it probably feels pretty good, especially when she's, like, been leaving you in the dark so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Allison is at home tearing through, I guess, Elliot's room. She is breaking picture frames that feature pictures of the two of them. She's frantic. She's breathing hard. Mary Drake comes in and is like, what's all this? Did Elliot make this mess? I'll help you clean up. It's like, no. Allison is so angry. She reveals that Elliot took everything from her. All the money. And then we get a list of the money. Joint accounts. Checking. Savings. All her shares of Karasimi. And, like, this is, like, another everything is meaningless. Like, all my shares of Karasimi. We hear about Karasimi so much in the run of the show, and, like, it never matters. Like, nothing ever really, but it's all her shares of Karasimi. So she's, like, doing kind of a Dallas here, like, all of my shares.
Yes.
He must have used her power of attorney. Mary Drake says, well, guess what? He double-crossed her, too. He was just greedy. He took all the money, and he ran. But the police will find him and all the money. They'll get all the money back. Allison is not convinced, and she flounces out, declaring that she can't sleep here. Mary Drake picks up a photo from beneath the shattered glass and picture frame and rips Elliot's money-having face in half.
Yeah, it seems like they're trying to set up this conflict whereby the only way to get the money back is to find Rollins. But Rollins is dead, and the liars are the only ones who know that. But, like, it's not a compelling or, like, cohesive enough dilemma. So it's just sort of like, well, and also, like, Allison still seems to sort of be taking Mary Drake at face value, which seems really weird to me. So I do kind of enjoy the idea, though, of, like, this, like, psychodrama of Emily or of Allison and Mary Drake, like, sharing this house together, like, both of them just, like, walking around and, like, Mary Drake, like, whispering into rooms and hiding under her breath and perpetually wearing head to toe black clothing while Allison is just trying to, like, read or, like, cook dinner or something, like,
right.
It is kind of an entertaining image. So Spencer approaches Toby's office at the police station, first making a joke about filing a missing persons report, and then making a Star Wars joke that I think was just the writers realizing that Toby rhymes with Obi. She asks if he's staying with Toby. No, but Toby knows where he is. Toby says that Caleb just needs time, and Spencer apologizes, and Toby, damn Jesus up here on the cross, says that they're both his friends. He wants to be good to them both. Spencer turns around to leave and runs smack into Marco from the bar, aka Marco Fiore, Toby's supervisor on the Rollins case. This is bad from the standpoint of, you know, Marco being a very corrupt cop. You know, he's in good company here. But I do like Spencer's just like, oh, God, this is very awkward face. There are a lot of like awkward run-ins in this episode.
It's true. It's true. And of course, she immediately pretends never to have met him before.
Oh, of course. Of course. Of course. And he kind of plays along with it.
Mm-hmm. And then like from a nearby window, she like kind of stares back at him with his badge and his gun and his junk. Or maybe she's just staring at the Rollins info that is on Toby's computer screen.
Yeah, hard to say exactly. But yeah, apparently this is who's been brought in to really, you know, take on this case.
So we have Jenna, who, you know, I'm just putting it out there that they said to meet at the usual place. And here Jenna is arriving at the De Laurentiis house. She is about to actually turn the knob to go in. But lo, Allison throws open the door. Ready to have a confrontation. Jenna pretends that she wanted to check on Allison, who Allison is like, but you thought I was in the mental hospital. And Jenna's like, I thought I would check on you by speaking with your husband. Allison kind of presses for details on how Jenna and Elliot know each other and also announces that he does not live here anymore. Allie accuses Jenna of trying to convince Elliot that she killed Charlotte. Jenna just says, oh, you've been unwell. I think you're confused. And as Jenna is walking away, Allison tells her, next time you call Archer, tell him to go to hell. And this is like Allison just getting really mad, but also she is letting Jenna know that she called Elliot and that they know that Jenna knows him as Archer. Jenna calmly responds, maybe he's already there. Game, set, and match to Jenna.
Yeah. Oh, no. Allie just, like, utterly fails this. Like, whether or not Jenna set this up, she got more than she bargained for here. Mm-hmm. Also, like, I love how Jenna just feels like she stepped out of another time period. Like, oh, I was, you know, coming to check in with your husband about how you're doing, the little lady in the mental institution, and you seem unwell. Like, it's Jenna feels like she just, like, stepped out of the 40s always.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Arya and Emily turn out to be the detective team up that I didn't know I needed. We find out that they are over here at the apartment and Emily slipped the guy, the front desk guy, a 20, and Arya slipped him her number. Well, the number to the Imperial Garden. And there's something about the way that Lucy delivers this line, that line, like, I also slipped in my number. Like, it's just very casual and just like very funny. Like, her timing is so good in this episode. They open up the apartment, and it is, as Emily puts it, a dump. Emily quickly goes full Pam Fields, very grossed out by everything, the dishes in the sink, the clothes strewn everywhere, the gross Murphy bed. But Arya is pretty ready to investigate. The Murphy bed at first appears to be stuck, but then it flops down, and there is a head? Arya very hilariously is freaked out, but Emily is intrigued and discovers that this head is some kind of mold, presumably for coconut oil masks. And they find on the wall, like, maybe like 6 very close-up pictures of Darren Wilden, which they surmise are there because Wilden, or because Rollins was pretending to be Wilden. Which I feel like a couple blown up pictures of like his mouth and eyes. It's not like this is like, oh, we've cracked it. Now we can make a perfect lifelike mask of this man.
In the world of this show, it's all they need.
Apparently so. Apparently so.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Okay. All right.
So. It's here, everybody. The live reading you didn't know you wanted, but...
It is. It is. So to set the scene, Sarah Harvey, who the liars have forgotten exists, is at the Radley Bar.
Yes. With a shaggy haircut that looks pretty good.
And a shaggy haircut and looking a little... She's still butch, but her hair is a little bit longer and she's wearing earrings. So they've thumbed her up. They've thumbed her up a little.
Okay.
Okay. So, Sarah, the bartender. John Collins, rocks, extra sour.
Jenna approaches. Is this seat taken?
Sarah, the bar looks pretty empty to... As though seeing Jesus in the flesh, me. Oh, I'm sorry. Here, let me help you. Gets up to help Jenna. Please disregard the fact that she doesn't have hands.
Thank you. Jenna, feel Sarah's weird hand through the glove. You're Sarah Harvey, aren't you? I'm Jenna Marshall. I think a few of the girls that you know are a few of the girls that I know.
Sarah, panicking, wondering if Jenna has slept with every one of the liars as well. What an unfortunate thing for us to have in common.
Well, the unfortunate things make us who we are. Can I buy your drink?
Only if you have one with me. Are you a tower girl?
Well, I can be.
Bartender! You'll have the same.
Four cherries, please.
Okay. Hot take. This is some of the best queer flirting we have gotten since the time jump. I thought this scene was just so, I mean, it is hilarious, but I love how the construction implies that they have both slept with multiple liars. A few of the girls that I know are a few of the girls that you know. Like, Sarah truly seems to respond as if she thinks that, like, Jenna is, like, from the public health department and is maybe, like, is maybe tracking some type of, like, STI outbreak, and that Sarah is going to, like, be held accountable for it or something. Also, the way that Jenna says the unfortunate things make us who we are, perfect, no notes, pure Jenna. But then the, is Jenna a sour girl? Like, what? What? I mean, I don't know. I think this is a better date than what Emily and Sabrina had.
Oh, for sure. Nobody's falling asleep, like, despite the sound of somebody else's voice. Sarah is, like, staring longingly at Jenna through this entire scene. I mean, okay, like, let's state a couple obvious things. It is bad that the show is taking these two queer disabled women and being like, they are evil and in league with each other and are going to take down our heroes. But this is very fun and very silly. And, like, no, they don't have chemistry, but it's almost like the way that, like, two magnets repel each other. Like, there's something here that is, like, kind of gross, but you can't look away from it.
They don't. I mean, they don't have chemistry, but that's because Sarah Harvey is, like, that's because Sarah Harvey. Is stale crackers. Like, yeah. I mean, she has better chemistry with Jenna than she did with Emily, but that's because it's Jenna. So, yeah, but I mean, I'm sorry, the sour girl thing, this is the most queer energy we have seen since the jump.
Oh, for sure. And, I mean, I think, as we have talked about, Sarah Harvey is a lot more interesting when she gets to play evil.
Yeah, and unlike a lot of other scenes in this particular episode, the motivation here is clear. Like, Sarah sees Jenna and wants to jump her bones. Like, that is, like, we have, like, a clear directive here, it seems like.
Well, and I also think this scene is being, like, intentionally campy versus, like, some of the, you know, like, the dumb Toby stuff that's, like, unintentionally kind of campy and ridiculous.
Yes.
Yeah. So do we have more that we want to say about the sour girl
scene? What more can be said? I mean, yeah. I remembered that scene mostly as a joke, and it is a hilarious joke, but I also really, really enjoyed it.
Oh, I enjoyed it too. And it was very fun to reenact. So back over at Rollins, Emily is putting her hands in the sink, digging around in that mess while Aria is sitting in the bed on the bed. I think the sink is a lot grosser. Like, digging around in a big, wet, dirty sink seems grosser than sitting on the bed to me, but whatever. Emily finds a bag with a passport in it and quickly deduces that this entire mess was a cover. To which I say, for whomst? Who is coming to the department?
A great, great question. Oh, so Spencer finds Hannah, who, guess where she is, Mina?
The brew!
Still at the brew. Hannah looks up from her PLL recap to that, you know, there's this burner apartment, and that Hannah has used her mom's password to get into the Radley system, and she's learned that Jenna just extended her stay. Spencer does not find this super suspicious. She mentions how they all thought they were only coming back for a few days, and now look at them. No, right? Then Hannah asks about Caleb. Spencer doesn't want to talk about it. Hannah asks what she can do to fix it. And Spencer says, think about why she's wearing one guy's ring if she has feelings for another. This is like, this is really weird because it, Spencer is throwing additional blame on Hannah here, which is like, I mean, Spencer is correct that Hannah and Caleb were behaving really badly, but like the thing is, Hannah is the one who's here. Caleb has like vamoosed. And so Spencer doesn't have Caleb to like talk through her feelings about. Yeah. So she's just like kind of lashing out at Hannah because Hannah actually is still present and is still trying to be like a supportive person in Spencer's life. And Spencer is punishing her for it.
Right. And I mean, Spencer doesn't get to dictate whether or not Hannah wears Jordan's ring. Like, this is where, like, the mushy boundaries of this whole situation are really coming into focus. And, like, the weird, like, everybody kind of deciding that Caleb should get back together thing, like, that we're just going to, that's just going to continue through the Caleb reconciliation. And I feel like we're definitely seeing that here where Spencer is like, well, I don't want to ship you, but I reluctantly have to.
Yes.
So Emily, back at the burner apartment, she determines that Rollins had an exit strategy for him and someone else, noting that with all these, you know, various plane arrangements and everything, it was for two people. Aria notes a ledger of cash payments likely to Mary Drake and Jenna Marshall. Also, Rollins had a copy of Twelfth Night with certain passages highlighted and helpfully had labeled in the front of the book, Archer Dunhill. Well, wasn't too hard to figure that one out, huh? Someone approaches, Emily locks the door, and they hide out for a moment. But who is at the door? It is Toby, operating as the Rosewood PD here.
Yeah. Oh, Toby. Fun times that he is the cop who shows up to, you know, bust them in this position. He comes in and he kind of gives them a, oh, you little ladies sort of lecture. They give him a fairly quickly thought up story of finding,
yes,
you know, Allison found a piece of paper with this address on it at her house. And so they said they'd come over here and check it out. He says that, have they been anywhere near Malvern Station? So here you are in the burner apartment hearing about Malvern Station. Oh no, of course they haven't. Why? Well, they found Rollins' car there. There was a prepaid receipt for this place in the glove compartment. To which I say, the liars didn't find that? Like, when they were going through the car at any point, they like missed that? Wow. Anyway, Toby is like, now listen, young ladies, Rollins is dangerous. He's on the run. What if he had been hiding out here, huh? he asks if they touched anything. Has he met them? Does he think that they just like came into this apartment, stood in the middle of the floor, and like cast their glances around? Oh my goodness. Anyway, Aria like shows him the passports and the money, and he acts like, oh my god, what a headache. His boss is going to be here, detectives are going to be here, and here are the liars coming in and finding all of his evidence. OMG. He says that they need to get out. He will give them 5 minutes before he calls this in.
Yeah, you know, this episode, I think, really shows that, like, a character being a scold is not very fun. Like, Toby is very much a scold in this episode. Allison kind of is at varying points. And, like, it's just not a super fun dynamic for your characters.
Yeah, I really agree.
So creepy Mary Drake humming. This is very like whatever happened to Baby Jane. She's just like walking through the dark and De Laurentiis hallways, humming to herself in her all black ensemble. Honestly, I'm surprised she's not like floating above the ground. Allison says that she didn't hear Mary leave, but Mary decided to go for a walk. There is a particular shade of blue in the evening sky. It settles her. Allie says that she remembers the song that Mary was humming. It's a lullaby that Mary and Jessica's mother used to sing to them. This song is about love, Allison, about men and lies. In a very low register, Mary sings the lyrics of the song, which refer to basically men behaving badly, and the two women bond over their love of, you guessed it, terrible men. Just then, the Rosewood PD call Allison. Mary and Allie stiffly tell each other goodnight, and Allison picks up her phone with a message from Marco.
Now for a scene with Marco and Allison. Marco is leading this investigation, and he heard about all of her stolen money. Hey, did you hear about Allison's stolen money? Because the bank called Marco and told him that someone stole all of Allison's money. She is upset. He gives her some info. They think Elliot has rented a car in Baltimore. They think he targeted her for her money. Marco seems to have, like, genuine empathy for her. Like, he does not, it's not as obvious as it used to be with Tanner that he thinks that the liars are up to no good. But Allison remains distrustful, and, like, rightfully so, because we have info about Marco that he is maybe not as stand-up a guy as he seems to be. Also, Allison officially wants to go back to the De Laurentiis as her last name instead of Rollins. So there's that.
There is that, yeah. And there's like some interesting camera work here, like where Allison's finding out that, you know, basically finding out that somebody knows what they did, you know, and there's like this like tight camera work and the words are echoing. Marco is saying that he won't stop until they find Rollins slash Archer. And it's like, poor Allison, you know, she was just trying to have autonomy over like one goddamn thing in her life without a man telling her that he can take it from here, sweetheart. But like here, Marco comes in being like, you know, we should really handle all the stuff with your money. Like little ladies like you shouldn't be handling money.
The police are very much in little lady mode.
For sure. And it doesn't help that like there are no female police officers at this point. Like it's just all dudes.
Okay, listen, there is a female police officer. One of them, the female police officer, shows Allison in to meet with Marco, and she's okay. Smiling at Allison in a way that I had a question mark about if it was pure energy. But we're really looking for crumbs here because we've got so much Emily and Sabrina in this episode.
Yeah, it's thin on the ground here. Speaking of Emily, okay, I have a note here about, like, my questions with this scene start from Emily's line. She's okay. At the brew. She's ordering coffee. She orders two red eyes and I quote, one of those lattes with soy. Now, Emily, who worked at the brew, would probably know that it's not called one of those lattes with soy. It's probably called a soy latte, or if it's something more intricate than a soy latte, it probably has a specific name. But no, Emily would like one of those lattes with soy. Just then, she spies Sabrina and walks over to her. They start mutually apologizing, and this is where we really see that they have completely changed Sabrina's character from sort of self-righteous and vaguely confident to this like shrinking Violet who stammers and is like, it's fine if you don't want, you know, if you don't want to see me again, this can just be like the breakup call and like, it's fine. Like, don't worry about it. Like, I'll just like run and hide from you right now. And Emily, for some godforsaken reason, is like, no, no, no. I want to see you again. I came over here to ask you out. Now, in fairness to Sabrina, I do think anyone would get slightly flustered seeing Emily Fields in that outfit because she has now added a leather jacket on top of the loosely buttoned shirt, and it is a very good look. But still, it's like a little weird that it suddenly seems like Sabrina is this woman who's like never interacted with another woman before.
Well, I think what they're doing is they're trying to kind of put Sabrina and Emily in a rom-com. Like they're trying to make, you know how Prezra and Aria were kind of the rom-com couple for a while.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to like do that here, but it's not like they don't have that timing. They don't have that chemistry. They don't have any of the components. So it just comes off as weird. But the reason I think they're doing that is because this scene is taking place in front of the bookshelves of the brew. And just in case we were like, what's going on here? I'm not sure. They're standing right in front of the bookshelf that says romance in those big translucent letters. So just in case anybody was not sure.
Yeah, because this scene is so flat that we need the reminder that it's romance.
Oh my God. Yeah, that scene is just like,
oh boy, flat Stanley.
Like, even if you, okay, let's just put this out there. Okay, so you went on a date with someone.
Okay.
You invited them to the place that you're crashing with your friend.
Okay.
That was your date. You invited them over there.
Okay.
We previously speculated that maybe actually why Hannah was at the brew was because Emily was like, hey, Hannah, can you clear out while I have my big date with Sabrina? And then Emily, like, never called her to let her know that she could come home. Like, Hannah's just a really good friend. So she was like, well, I guess I gotta hang out on this couch all day until I see that Sabrina comes back.
That sock has sure been on the door for a long time. Yeah.
But like, okay, so you invited someone over for this date.
Okay.
They talked until you literally fell asleep.
You bored them to sleep. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And then they kind of creepily stayed in your space all night long. And then you wound up having to like run off and leave them in your apartment the next morning. So this is the interaction you've had. Then you have another awkward run-in on the streets of Rosewood. You're about to go do a crime. They want to talk to you while they're doing their muffin deliveries. So let's run through it. And then for whatever reason, you decide that you do want to go on a date with them again. What would you think of Sabrina's attitude here? Who, like, Emily walks over and Sabrina's just like, do it! Break up with me!
Here's my heart. Do you want to stab it? Yeah, I mean, I feel like at this point it's like, maybe you just call it a wash. Like, maybe you're like, you know, none of this has gone well. All of this started by like me stealing a key to break into an apartment and you like, you know, like lecturing me multiple times about how you could never vibe with somebody who lies. I'm a person who like lies a lot. Like, it just kind of is like part of my personality at this point. Like, I don't think we're compatible. I just don't think so.
Well, plus I feel like even if you wanted to go out with Sabrina again, I just feel like how weird she is and how like certain she is you're about to break. Like, I don't know. I mean, that would give me pause. But also, like, I mean, if I had woken up the next day and someone had just creepily stayed over at my place, like, that would also give me pause.
Well, you know what? Maybe, here's a thought. You know, Emily runs so hot and cold. And, like, Sabrina has run very hot and cold through the duration of their, I'll generously call it a relationship. So maybe it's just, like, Emily is, like, very attracted to that. Like, she's like, ooh, there's something familiar and intriguing by this. Like, somebody is playing my own game back at me. Even though I don't think it's Sabrina playing a game. I think it's bad writing. But Emily interprets it as a game.
Yeah, okay.
But this scene ends. Emily goes back to get her red eyes and one of those lattes with soy and sees Sarah and Jenna, who've just done some shopping. Because this is what girls do, apparently. They, like, have sex in the Radley bar and then go shopping. Sarah snarks about Emily's time at Hollis, clearly, like, heavily implying that she was involved in the whole business with the test. Apparently, Sarah knows that Emily is... This is another, like, we didn't need this to be explained. But Sarah knows that Emily is at Hollis because Toby told Jenna. Sure. And Jenna says, must feel good to finish what you started.
Yes.
Do we think... Oh, go ahead.
No, you, please.
Do we think that all of the shopping bags are a cover for the fact that they were just, like, hooking up in all these dressing rooms all day? Like, what has their day been?
I assume that the bags are full of sex toys. That would be my assumption. Maybe some lingerie. Like, I think that's probably what's going on. But I would also like to point out that Sarah and Jenna have now been in more locations. Jenna, particularly, in this episode, than Hannah has been. Because Jenna was at the De Laurentiis house. She was at the Brew earlier when Hannah saw her. She went to the De Laurentiis house. She went to the Radley Bar. She went shopping with Sarah. And now she's back at the Brew. And then she's going to be at the Radley Bar.
Yeah, good point.
So Jenna has been to, like, many locations. Hannah, we're going to see her in a minute elsewhere. But she's basically just been at the Brew all day long, waiting to get the all clear from Emily.
She's like, wow. I mean, I've heard that lesbian sex can cut a marathon, but, like, this is really kind of getting weird, Emily. I've been surviving on muffins for the last 48 hours. One note, though, about the possibility that Jenna and Sarah were purchasing sex toys, a thought I just had is that, like, Jenna, if, like, Sarah used handcuffs on Jenna and Jenna used a blindfold on Sarah, they kind of be, like, equal playing field. You know what I'm saying?
Wow. Yeah, that is true. However, remember how Sarah Harvey's hands cannot even hold a pen? Remember when her manservant had to sign, like, the bill at the Radley? Well, here she is she's carrying all of Jenna's shopping bags, like, all of them. And I even looked to be like, okay, are they, like, draped over her wrists? No, they're in her hands.
She needed, like, the power of, like, Jenna gave her some, like, magical power that, like, mm-hmm. makes her able to
do. She's doing it with sonar. She has sonar.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so they walk out together, and Emily kind of stares after them, wondering if their date is going better than hers did.
Well, I think we can definitively say it did. I mean, they're still hanging out. It doesn't seem like anyone's awkwardly rushed away after a morning breath kiss.
Yeah, like, Jenna is, like, making, you know, remarks about, isn't it nice to finish, you know? So,
oh, yeah.
Like, we just did in the bathroom. But, you know, like, that seems to be.
And Sarah Harvey's like, I don't even have hands, and I can make sex work better than whatever you have going on, Emily.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So, at the barn, guess what we get to hear about first? Guess. Now, we hear, again, how Allison has lost all her money. What?
Shocking.
Allison lost all of her money? How could this be? Emily's like, this just keeps getting worse and worse. Like, Emily, were you after Allison's money? Like, what is going on here? The liars are panicked because the trail that they laid was supposed to end in Philly. If it's going past that, it means someone knows what they did. Hannah, in a place that's not the Brew for 2 seconds, is like, oh my God, someone knows what I did. And then she runs out of the room to go panic more elsewhere.
To throw up. She's like, I'm going to be sick.
God. Okay. So, well, yeah, poor thing. She's been eating nothing but muffins all day.
Yes. And, like, drinking red eyes and a latte with soy.
Oh, man. So Aria wonders if Mary Drake is behind this. Allison honestly does not think so. She says that Mary was at the hospital working to get Allie released and did not have time to go to Baltimore. Emily floats Sarah and Jenna as possible suspects. And then Allie admits that she may have messed up and let Jenna know that they're on to her. Emily and Aria wish someone had shown up at the burner apartment, but they realize that Toby's squad car might have scared them off. Aria, who's been ignoring her phone for most of this conversation, gets a message from Prezra that they need to talk. Can she come by the Brew? Aria, gets up and goes to leave, despite Allison Stark, Arya is just like, listen, I gotta go. I need to make it to, like, my 9th and 10th location of this episode. Yeah. Please, please bear with me.
Yeah, I've got, like, 3 more to hit before midnight. I have, like, goals to keep up. This is the scene, though, where Allison is just like, she's like, I hate when Hannah panics like that. Really? Right now, Arya? Like, Allie is so unfun in this scene and in this episode. And it's a bummer.
Give her a break, Vita. You may not have heard that she just lost all of her money.
You may have heard she lost some money. Yeah, for sure. You know, I just had the thought as we were talking about this that, like, they have not invested enough in Emily for her to anchor an episode as much as she has anchored this particular episode. Like, I think part of why this episode feels so weird and off the wall is, like, there's so little of Spencer and Hannah, who are really the, like, characters that a lot of the emotional investment has been kind of staked on lately.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And, like, you know, you talked about, like, Arya is your favorite post-jump liar. I think the thing with Lucy is that, like, she is still giving it all of her energy. Like, Arya in a scene equals energy. And, like, Troian is, like, a true professional as well. But Spencer, like, Troian right now is playing a character who is depressed. And
yes.
He is, like, drinking all the time. And who is having a rough go of it. So, like, that's just, it's great work, but it is not as fun to watch as, like, Arya, like, teleporting all over town and making things hella awkward with Sabrina and the Hat.
And Lucy seems like she's actually having fun. Like, I don't know if she's faking it or not.
Yeah.
But, like, she seems like she's having a good time. And, like, she's bringing these, like, zany nuances to her delivery that are doing a lot for, like, a not great script.
Yeah, I mean, she's, like, fucking delighted to hear about Cousin Flood. Like, she doesn't, you know, she doesn't even, like, miss a beat there. She's just like, how does that relate to me? And on she goes.
Yeah, tell me that story. Yeah, exactly. She's great. I'm just, yeah, like, hats off. Sabrina's hats off to Lucy Hale. So then the Little Sparrow song starts playing. And I don't mean, like, a little tinkly song in the background. Oh, no. This woman, whoever she is, I didn't look this up, she is belting it. She is like, I am going to sing this lullaby like it is, you know, America the Beautiful at a football game or something. And so this kind of plays over this little mini montage where Spencer returns to the darkened barn. She looks at the bed, and then we see her walking in the direction of the living room, kind of implying that she can't bear to sleep on the bed, which is, like, an interesting thing of, like, nobody's getting to sleep in their bedrooms in this episode, I guess. We go over to Hannah. This is a nice little moment. Hannah is sitting on the couch at the loft. She kind of takes off her ring, but then when Emily approaches, she puts her ring back on. Emily has brought her some tea and wraps a blanket around her and comes down to snuggle with her. Then we go to Allison in her bedroom. Suddenly, the dry cleaned sweater, remember the sweater that was like the smoking gun of Allison's guilt, has appeared in her closet. And there is now a note from AD on it. Your friends gave me your dirty jacket, but I couldn't find a shred of evidence. AD.
Then Arya, the music still playing, arrives at the darkened brew. Because what is more romantic to do when your girlfriend was previously wrapped in plastic and nail gunned in this space than to make her walk through it abandoned in the dark? She walks to the brew. She gets to his place. And there are a million candles going. This is a real ripoff of Maya and Emily, but okay. And then remember when we wrote a fic where he wants her to be a Fitzgerald just so he can sacrifice her to the dark forces? This candle setup really sets a scene for that. But anyway,
yes.
his proposal, shocker, is all about him. And also roller coasters. Will Arya marry him? Oh my god. Fucking run, girl. Especially after he harkens back to how they started. Ugh, remember how Mary Kay Letourneau married that 12-year-old student when they were both adults? Some wrongs you cannot make right.
Yeah, this is such a bad proposal. He's like, well, I'm going to talk, and then you're going to talk, and then I'm going to talk, and then you're going to talk. And it's like, okay, well, then get to the talking, Prezra. And then, like, that one of the memories he brings up, like, the thing he says about, like, well, you said you always wanted to be in my life, and I said I couldn't imagine my life without you. Like, those are words that they said to each other during one of their thousands of breakups. Like, maybe not the best thing to bring up during a marriage proposal. And he says he doesn't ever want to let her go, which, like, is creepy, you know, given everything. Like, this is just terrible. Also, this ring box he pulls out is disgusting. This thing looks like it's, like, from some, like, weird antique store.
It totally does.
Yeah, and Aria, like, she doesn't look like elated. She looks like, there's kind of, like, an oh shit expression on her face.
Yeah, I like that she doesn't answer in this episode. Like, the scene cuts out, like, right as her lips are going to start moving. But I really like that she does not say anything right away, because it is extremely clear that he's not actually asking a question. Like, the method of his proposal presupposes her answer.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is clearly not anything that they've talked about remotely. Like, this is just him deciding that he's ready to spring this on her.
Yeah, it's really weird. Like, he gets dressed up. He's doing all of this, like, all of this fanciness with the candles and stuff. And it's just like they've been together for such a long time. They've known each other for such a long time. This just really is, like, I think, yet another sign of just, like, of just, like, their relationship not being on actual, like, they just don't have, like, a mature foundation for what they're trying to do here.
Well, I completely agree, and I also think that this proposal, and again, whether it's, like, right or laziness or what, but, like, it's so impersonal to their relationship. Like, yes, he is stating phrases that they've said to each other, but, like, I mean, include the typewriter or something, Prezra. Like, this is Aria that you're proposing to. And just, like, some candles and, like, calling her up to your apartment at the end of the day. Like, put a little more effort in.
Yeah, this is, like, this is actually, I feel like, a generic proposal that you might give to a 15-year-old girl.
For example.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I'm so sorry that you had to talk about this scene, but I'm very glad that this episode ends with a different scene. At the Radley, Sarah and Jenna are toasting their last round. They've been day drinking and day fucking and having just a grand old gay time together today. But there's an extra drink. Who could it be for? And we hear a rather familiar voice say, "Babes and boobs, babes and boobs, not babes." I mean, he probably is thinking that too, but he says, "Babes and booze, you must have been expecting me." And who is it? Noel Kahn! I feel like a, like, guitar riff should play after that, like, meow, 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 meow. And Jenna helpfully tells us, Noel Kahn. And what does Noel Kahn say? "Did you miss me?" And I feel like his delivery of "Did you miss me?" is really fun, because it's like, it's not like the normal super serious Allie, like, "Did you miss me?" Like, it's a genuine, like, "Hey, did you miss me?" Like, it's exactly the way a guy like Noel Kahn would deliver that line. And all I can say, Noel, is like, yes, yes, we missed you very, very much.
We did. We did. I am glad to have him back.
What they do with him is abysmal. Like, I really do not like the, like, villainification of Noel Kahn that's going to happen over the next several episodes. But I am so glad to have him back. Like, I was surprised by how excited I was to see this man's face. I was like, yes, Noel, come on. Bring it in, Noel. So that is the end of the episode. A wild ride. What are your final thoughts?
Well, okay. I still don't understand. I don't understand what's going on with the queerness right now, because it's temporarily back.
Yeah.
We have this, like, Emily was like another thing that we keep hearing about is that Emily was on a date, not at Malvern Station and not at the Burner apartment. but, you know, Emily was on a date with Sabrina, and she's maybe going to go on another one. Also, she says she's going to ask Sabrina out again, but she doesn't, like, do that. She doesn't say, like, do you want to go out and do this thing? Like, it's still yeah. very, like, unknown. So I don't really know what's going on, why they're trying to keep that going. And also, why do you think that we have this whole Sour Girls alliance between Jenna and Sarah when I was like, maybe Sarah's around for more of this half season than I think. But no, next week is going to be Sarah's last episode. So why do we do this? Really? Why do we bring Sarah back and make her be queer for Jenna only to have her be done after the next episode ends?
I don't have a good explanation for that. I mean, I do think that, like, there is kind of this thing happening here where it's like, well, let's just round up the usual suspects and bring them back in. And it's like, well, we never really resolved the Sarah Harvey thing. We'll bring her back. And, like, Jenna and Noel, people like them, they're going to bring Sydney back soon. They're going to bring Paige back soon. Like, there is a bit of a victory lap happening here. It's just funny to extend that to Sarah, a character who nobody ever liked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who nobody ever liked. And, like, you know, the Sabrina thing, a character that no one cares about.
Well, and I also wonder with the Sarah thing, if there's, because there was that thing, and like you've pointed this out, how dumb this is, where it's like this sort of attitude of like, well, haha, joke's on Sarah, we're going to kill her in the bathtub. And it's like, well, you guys are the ones who wrote a terrible character, like the joke's on you there. I wonder if there's a bit of an aspect of like, oh, we're going to bring Sarah back and we're going to pair her with Jenna, a character who people love and who is clearly the character that they are trying to emulate with Sarah Harvey. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like battle of the Jennas and like the prime Jenna will win. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost like the, you know, Jenna 2.0 could only be destroyed by like Jenna prime or something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But like, it's just like not that interesting and a bummer because it results in another queer woman getting killed on this show.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely yeah. agree.
Well, next week is Wanted, Dead or Alive. You know, we're sort of digging further into like Noel Kahn as a returning presence in these characters' lives. So that'll be fun. That'll be a fun time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to, you know, I am enjoying, I think you were right. This half season is more enjoyable than I had maybe expected it to be.
Well, and I think mostly it's because like, it's because of the characters and the actors that we have back. Like, we have Jenna back, we have Noel back, we have Andrea Parker back chewing up all of the scenery. You know, Emily, for better or for worse, is at least allowed to be queer again. Allison, at least, is, like, not still mooning over Rollins. So it's, like, marginal improvements all around, I think.
Yeah.
So, any more that we want to say about this episode?
Just that I would like to nominate Allison's cat eye gray sweatshirt. I would like to nominate this for like a top five worst Allison look from this period. That
ooh,
sweatshirt,
okay.
I feel like it's up there with the Pug Prozol sweatshirt.
Oh, for sure. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, okay, we've entered this era now where we're just like putting her in these big shapeless sweatshirts. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Well, if you have thoughts on this episode, you can, of course, send us an email at everybodyapodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out our Instagram at everybodyapodcast. You can check out our Spotify at everybodyAeverybodyGay. Going to also send in a rating and review on iTunes. We would appreciate it. Next week, we will be back with Wanted, Dead or Alive. So until then,
take
good
care.
Night to all sour girls out there.